You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
You know, they have a game for the final score is what you look for, you know, and whatever that is at the end of the game, that's the winner. And certainly not going to sit here and apologize about anything. We won 38-17, but we certainly can get a lot better, and I can be a better coach, and that's what will happen.
It wasn't pretty, but Arkansas won its season opener over Rice. Matt Jones with Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com and Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Guys, how do you assess what happened on Saturday with Arkansas falling behind by 17-7, but then finishing strong, scoring 31 answered to beat the Owls?
Thought that they wanted to give KJ Jefferson some easy throws early on, and it turned out some of those little screens were dropped by Treylon Burks, who had just gotten back in practice a couple of days before the game. And I think it threw the whole rhythm of their offense off, and they had a couple of third and twos late in the second quarter where Burks ran one on end around. And then there was another one where the snap hit him as he was in motion. We don't know what that play was going to be, but it hit him. And so they blew up two third and twos, and the fans were upset and frustrated. And I get it. I mean, they were very fortunate that Rice is not a very explosive team. But bottom line, if you look at KJ Jefferson's stats, he was 12 of 21, and without the three drops, he's 15 of 21, and that takes your percentage up to 71%. And, yes, he did have some that sailed, but just the three drops and he's 71%, you can live with that. Obviously, their passing game has to get better. I thought their defense was pretty stout, and special teams have work to do. So, basically, it was a good team to open against so you can get a win, and now they got to clean up a lot of stuff fast or Texas will come in here and really handle them.
Yeah, I'm curious when we're going to start saying that, you know, special teams needs more work. Like we've been saying that since the beginning of last year. And second straight opener that Arkansas has had a punt blocked. And not only was a punt blocked, you had another 25-yard punt. You finally got a little bit of punt return yardage from Greg Brooks. It's interesting. It was interesting in the preseason, you know, hearing that Greg Brooks was going to be a punt return guy. And, you know, he split time, I think, with Nathan Perotti. I like what Greg Brooks gave him. You know, I think he picked up maybe 7 or 8 yards on his punt return, but it was, you know, a pretty fun, electric 7 yards, you know, made a couple guys miss. You need somebody to do that. The mistakes were just, you know, plenty. And Sam Pittman said Monday, you know, that he, you know, watching it live, it probably felt like they made more mistakes, you know, than when he went and watched the tape again. 8 penalties in the first half, not great. It felt like, you know, kind of 2019-ish in the first half. And then especially when Ladarius Bishop got beat over the top by, gosh, 8 to 10 yards. Like he just got caught like peeking into the backfield. And you can't do that. Those kind of plays, you know, might, you know, lead to Hudson Clark getting a little bit more time. Like you can't have plays like that, especially against Texas. I think Texas has – I was looking at Pro Football Focus. They've got the top-rated receiver in the country right now in terms of overall offense grade. So, curious to see who gets that matchup this week. Like Tom said, like we can get more into KJ later, but he was really good with his feet. And on the 2 touchdown runs he had, you know, me and Clay were sitting right next to each other. I thought he did a good job on both scores of kind of pausing in the pocket, looking a safety off, and then darting through the middle of the field. I agree with Sam Pittman wholeheartedly. You know, when KJ, you know, gets things going with his feet, I think his passing game, his accuracy and his precision improves. I think you'll see a better passing performance from KJ in week 2, a little bit more settled in.
That's the second time in his career that Reed Bowers had a punt blocked. It almost makes me think back to a you know, like baseball, when somebody steals a base, a lot of times you focus on the catcher, but it's really about the, you know, the timing of the pitcher to the plate. That's what they're really stealing off of. It makes you wonder about not necessarily the protection but you know, his time in getting a punt off, I don't know if that's what's going on with him, but that is a thought that I've had. You mentioned KJ Jefferson, Scotty. Pro Football Focus said that he's the number one, or had the best running performance of any quarterback in FBS this week. I don't know about you, but he really surprised me with how well he ran with the ball. I mean, he ran, what, 9 times for 89 yards, had a couple of touchdowns, had most of a 68-yard touchdown called back. Otherwise, it would have been a well over 100-yard rushing game for him. There seems to be, and we've heard about this throughout the offseason, that he changes things with the way that he can run the ball. They didn't have that with Franks last year, but I was still pretty surprised by how well he ran it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, maybe the best part of his game right now. I think, you know, he's still working out the kinks in a way with his arm. But, you know, somebody, I think it was Steve Sullivan, asked KJ after the game, it was like, what was that, you know, that long run like that they got called back? And, you know, KJ made several guys miss in the open field before, you know, keeping his balance along the sideline. Like that's not easy for a guy that's, you know, 6'3" and, you know, you say whatever you want about his weight, we'll call it 240, 245. He looked pretty good. And I might get some blowback for this, but his first touchdown run reminded me a little bit of Dak Prescott, just the way that he took off and ran, made a guy miss, and looked pretty good in the open field. I think that's where he's at his best. It adds another dimension to this offense. You know, it can be scary. And KJ, you know, I don't know that we really saw it a whole lot the other day. I know one time he pulled the ball in a RPO, picked up a first down, and I think he barreled over a defender. I think we'll see a little bit more of that, you know, as the season goes on, because he's a big guy. He can punish some defensive backs that way.
There's some guys, there's some defenders who had angles on him in that first touchdown, and he just outran them. I just thought it was curious leading into the game that Sam Pittman talked about how they really focused on wanting him to be a pocket passer. And so I think that mentality might have led to, say, that the first sack, which was on the first offensive play of the game. Side note here, I think sacks should count as negative yardage on team passing, like it does in the NFL, and not on individual quarterback and not on your team rushing. And that bothers me, and I hope they correct it one day. And on the punt block, I think Shane Clinton just whiffed on his man. He came right off Shane Clinton's right shoulder, and he didn't even put a stiff arm or anything out there on the guy. So I don't know what he was looking at, but I think that was just a blown edge block.
One other thing on KJ real quick. I remember a run. I think it was early in the game. I think it was 3rd and 7 or 3rd and 8, and KJ got some pressure off the edge, sidestepped a guy, which really good agility, making a guy miss in short space. And then he got into the open field, you know, maybe more toward the boundary or Arkansas sideline. And a Rice safety had the opportunity to, you know, hit him and stop him short of the line to gain. And he wanted no part of KJ coming straight at him. And I think that presence and, you know, the load that KJ is to bring down, you know, maybe when he's barreling right at you, I think there's going to be quite a few DBs that you know, make similar type plays just because they don't want that punishment.
Defensively, I thought the Razorbacks looked pretty good on Saturday, especially against the run. I mean, just what was it, 80 rushing yards, I think, that Rice had on something like 39 carries. Really strong performance. And, you know, I don't know that we've seen this defense at full strength yet. I mean, obviously John Ridgeway hasn't been there. And another baseball reference, you know, they say baseball teams are the best up the middle. I think it's kind of the same with defense, you know, your safety and your linebackers and your defensive tackle. And we haven't seen that yet, really, at least in terms of who we think their strongest are, because Ridgeway hasn't played. The thought is that he'll be back for this week's game against Texas. Of course, you know, Morgan and Poole didn't get to play with each other for very long because Morgan was thrown out for targeting, and then Poole was thrown out late. And then, of course, Jalen Catalan had the great performance. What did we think defensively of how Arkansas played? And, Tom, how do you think that carries over into this game against Texas?
I thought their front played pretty well. I mean, the pass rush wasn't exactly – I thought there'd be a little bit more on the pass rush, but I thought they handled the run really well against a team that – prides itself on the run, that runs ISOs, as Sam Pittman pointed out, with a fullback. And they held them to 2 point something yards per carry. And the longest run Rice had was 7 yards. That's a good day, especially when you've rotated the linebackers through that they had to. Jalen Catalon helps erase a lot of mistakes. He came up and made some great tackles. So it's just a huge plus to have a safety of that magnitude. And I do think that when Ridgeway comes back, that's just a little bit more stopping power up the middle for a team like Texas that is really going to try to establish Bijan Robinson. I think Arkansas would be better off to make Hudson Card beat him passing the ball and doing things with his legs. But a nice start. And I do think that the rotation is going to be deeper now. And, I mean, Utsi gets his hand on the ball. This is when the game's still in doubt, when Utsi tipped that pass, that the first one Catalon intercepted. So good job by him. And I just think that we're going to see I think the defensive line play is going to continue to improve.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, with Ridgeway, if he's able to play, I mean, Sam Pittman thinks he's going to be able to play Saturday, but he did not expound on, you know, how much or if he would start, anything like that. Didn't go into great detail. But if Ridgeway is able to give you, you know, starter snaps, that puts a guy like Isaiah Nichols, who started last week and is a capable guy, you know, in the middle on your second team D line with a guy like Torian Carter, you know, battling for that same position. Torian Carter had a good week.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you look at Arkansas's tackles, and I think Torian Carter's tied for third with 6, and he played less than 30 snaps. So he made really good work with the snaps that he got. And, you know, I liked Utsi, you know, getting his hand on the ball, that one of the balls that Catalon picked. On that same play too, Trey Williams came on the edge at the top of the play and maybe disrupted the quarterback's lower half, and then Utsi got a hand on the ball and got a big takeaway there. You know, I thought Mateo Soli played pretty well. I think he got 13 snaps. He graded pretty well. Saw, you know, when he was on the field, you saw him, you know, he just didn't blend in like maybe he has in the past. I like Zach Williams too. There was one play, like I mentioned, I was sitting next to Clay, and Zach Williams is the end on an RPO. And I think the quarterback kept the ball and he ran with the quarter. He beat the quarterback to the sideline. Really, really nice play from Zach. He's always been able to run. I mean, you can just go on and on about that D line. And I think Sam really liked what they got from the D line. I think the pass rush will improve. I think, you know, one of the reasons you didn't really see like the sack numbers or the tackles for loss numbers weren't that great. I mean, Rice got the ball out pretty quick. So not too concerned about that. I think with a more able pocket passer, I think guys like Trey Williams, Zach Williams and the like, they'll be able to get in the backfield.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Bud Anderson is the official heating and cooling provider of the Razorbacks. Give them a call, 479-231-3827, or visit them online at gocallbud.com. Targeting, that is really one of the big stories that came out of the, you know, the first game. Hayden Henry had to miss the first half. I think a lot of people forgot that he had to serve a suspension for the ejection that he had in the final game last year when he knocked or hit Mac Jones really hard in the Alabama game. We mentioned Morgan got thrown out in the first half of this game, and now Bumper Pool's going to have to miss the first half of the Texas game because of the targeting ejection that he had in the fourth quarter. We've talked about this before, Scotty and I have. I know, Tom, I don't remember if you were on this one in the preseason when we talked about targeting and Jalen Catalon and how it was an issue for him a year ago. But it just seems to me like targeting, this rule, really needs an overhaul in college football. I think the intent of the rule is good, but it's a bad rule. It reminds me of an editorial that our newspaper had one time. They said, it's a bad law, even though the intent of the law is really good. It seems to me, though, that college football could maybe go to a college basketball model of flagrant one, flagrant two, on how to throw out these players, because not all targeting calls are equal. And I don't think what Grant Morgan or what Bumper Pool did on Saturday were these egregious type hits that ought to cost them to miss an entire football game. And I think Sam Pittman, Tom, on Monday really said that too. He thought the punishments were too harsh.
He did say that. And I hear where he's coming from. Grant Morgan could have avoided his by simply pulling up. The quarterback had already thrown the ball and you know, his helmet made contact. So I think that one was more avoidable. And I think the one with Poole, when the ball carrier drops his head at the moment you're coming in, it's there's some inevitable helmet clashes that are going to take place. And I thought to a large degree in, let's say, in the side of the tackle box, the rough and tumble part of a play, quite often that's going to take place. And so I do think that at some point, if enough coaches raise concerns about this and go to their ADs and get it done in meetings, that they might look at putting grades on them, or as you mentioned, the way they do the flagrant fouls. Because, yeah, there's a difference between an unprotected receiver catching the ball deep down the middle and a safety lowering his head and crushing him in the helmet area, as opposed to what Bumper Poole did. And Jalen Catalon's against LSU, I'll protest till the end. I didn't think that was worthy of ejection, and I thought it had a huge impact on the outcome of the game. So, but there's nothing they can do about these. And this linebacking crew, you know, three games in a row now is going to be affected by targeting calls.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's, you know, as long as these plays and these hits like aren't incredibly egregious, you know, I think, you know, like a yellow card, red card deal might work here. Or like Matt said, the flagrant foul, flagrant one, flagrant two, that brings some subjectivity, obviously, to it. But I, you know, I think you could probably enforce this, you know, just like maybe the same way that you do the unsportsmanlike penalties, like with Jalen Catalon's hit along the sideline. Like that was, you could probably say that was unnecessary. You flag him, you know, you hit him with a penalty. Maybe you make the penalty a little bit bigger, and like instead of a 15-yard penalty, you make it 20 or 25. I don't know what you do. I just think it's funny how this is officiated, because I just finished charting KJ Jefferson's day passing, and I watched one play where I think he handed the ball off to Traylon Smith, and KJ ran left. Traylon Smith initially ran toward the middle, but he cut back left, and KJ's out there throwing kind of a lead block, and KJ, he sticks his head down and kind of goes out and hunts a Rice defender. But because KJ Jefferson's on offense, the officials aren't going to throw a flag like that. I feel like that could have been, like, if you look at that, they could have, you know, tossed KJ Jefferson out of the game. It's kind of interesting to me how all this is policed.
Well, and in basketball, remember, a flagrant one is still a penalty. You still get the free throws. You still get the ball. It could be the same thing with targeting. You know, head-to-head hit is still a 15-yard penalty. It's just you don't lose a player for the rest of that game and potentially for a couple of quarters in the next game. And it's worth noting, Dom, you mentioned, you know, if enough coaches get their ADs to go raise hell about this, Hunter Yurecek is on the oversight committee now. You know, remember, he started that term, and part of the oversight committee is to make recommendations to the rules committee. And so you wonder whether or not, you know, he has some sway in getting this modified over the course of, you know, the next however many years that he's on that committee. Before we go, Arkansas and Texas this weekend, 6 o'clock kickoff on ESPN. Tom, I know you submitted your AP poll earlier. Where do you have the Longhorns, and how do you see this game going this week?
Yeah, I understand Texas being a favorite in this game, and I think logically they could be even a bigger favorite based on the way they played. I do expect Arkansas to have a cleaner game than last week and maybe have a few things. I think both teams will have things that the other will have to adjust to in game. And I moved them up. I think I had them 21 in my initial poll. I've got the Longhorns at 15. There was a lot of movement in the middle and back end of the poll between either teams losing games or just not looking very good. For instance, Oklahoma State, I had 25th, and they beat Missouri State by 23-16. And so I just dropped them out. And I moved a lot of teams into my poll, like Auburn, Ole Miss, UCLA, I moved in. To me, the first several weeks is a long feeling out process of the teams, and particularly from 15 to 25. And Texas has a chance to keep motoring on up if they win this game.
I've always thought it would be best to have a poll that doesn't come out until maybe like the end of September, early October. I think that would be, you know, more reflective of of how teams or how good teams are. You wouldn't have number 8 Arkansas losing to ULM, you know, in that type of scenario. But I understand why the polls come out when they do. I think, you know, especially TV networks really love this because they're able to hype up these early season games. Go to wholehogsports.com this week. We're going to have a lot of coverage leading up to the Razorbacks game against Texas. We'll be back with another podcast on Friday, going a little bit more in depth on that game and previewing the Arkansas-Texas game this weekend.
The proceeding has been a production of wholehogsports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at wholehogsports.com for the latest news and commentary.